Welcome to the Steelers Battle Lake podcast. My name is James, joined once again by my co-host on this Victory Monday, on this playoff Victory Monday, Cody Tanner. How are you today?
I'm fantastic. It's not a playoff Victory Monday, but it is a Victory Monday, and we're going to be going to the playoffs. So,
all right. I got a little overzealous with my wording.
You did. If we can talk about this next Tuesday, it'll probably be a Tuesday recording because we want to talk full. There's a Monday night freaking wild card game. I think we wait until after that to record. Maybe we don't. We'll figure that out.
We'll see how it plays out.
We'll let you guys know. Maybe we want to wait. Maybe we don't. Maybe we're just too excited about the win or too depressed about a loss. We'll figure it out.
I think if Pittsburgh wins, then the Monday night game could play into it, and then we'll probably be a little more likely to push it to Tuesday to figure out when their next game is and that sort of thing.
Fair enough. But I'm good, James. How are you doing today?
Good. Continuing on the upward trend health-wise, so that's what we got to have here, right?
Heck yeah.
No backsliding. There's no options. There's no one else at work to do the job.
No, there's
Everybody's
not.
Gone.
So, if you are in the Erie area and want to work with James and I, let us know. There is an opening.
Lost
not
one
on
guy
podcast.
Due to dishonesty.
Not on the podcast, to clarify. Not on the podcast. Right now, it's still a two-man show for now.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens. So Steelers football. We always get excited. Before we get that far, big news on the defensive line.
Yeah, a former sixth-round draft pick in Isaiah Bugs was released previous to the game. Not moved to the COVID list, not moved to the practice squad, none of that. Straight up cut. I think it's pretty significant, honestly. You know, he was the number two defensive tackle, the number two nose tackle, that is, as the season started and progressed. And the team honestly struggled pretty mightily stopping the run when he was the nose tackle. So when they went out and they made the move to get Montrezl Adams, it was not a good sign for Isaiah Bugs. And then he was just never able to get back out there. Struggled with some injuries, had COVID. And just never showed enough on the field to have Pittsburgh interested in bringing him back next year.
No,
right?
And when you have someone like Adams come in and perform at the level that he was able to, again, I don't think Adams played phenomenally by any means, but the consistency was there and the strength was there. We talked about that earlier. We were missing strength. We had a little bit of speed, maybe not as much as you'd still like, but Adams was blowing up offensive linemen. Sure, he was making bad angles, but I'd still rather someone be able to do that and fix the angles than not be able to do either or. So.
And he's super disruptive the way he gets penetration and gets onto the other side of the line of scrimmage. That's something you just weren't seeing out of Bugs. He didn't have that burst like you have with Adams. So I look forward, honestly, to Adams being the number two nose tackle next year behind Alualu, assuming Alualu comes back all the way healthy and is able to go one more season. But if he isn't, I don't feel awful about Adams being a possible starter after that.
Nope.
And he's been saying all the right things to the media members, talking about hoping to play in Pittsburgh for a long time and wanting to come back. And I'm with it. You know, I want to see him back.
Listen,
I've been impressed.
I don't know anyone on the defensive line who in the NFL who wouldn't want to come play with Pittsburgh. Now that you shored up TJ Watt for the length that he is, you'll get yours. You just gotta wait for it and work.
And Cam's under contract too, right? Cam's under contract for like another 3 years. So you're playing with those two guys, two double-digit sack guys. Come on.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're basically
gonna
go
play there, and I know that I'd get murdered. But I'd still probably get a sack or two. Exactly.
Put me up against Kendrick Green, I'll get a sack.
Yeah, that's fair. Speaking of Kendrick Green and actually Joe Hayden, they're both activated off the COVID list prior to the game. Unfortunately, they did wind up putting James Washington on the COVID list. So you had two guys come off, one guy go on, is what it is. The team also did elevate offensive guard Rashad Coward to the 53 prior to the game. And then in practice squad moves, they signed kicker Sam Sloman, who we've talked about time and time again, and then released wide receiver Tyler Vaughns. So, from the practice squad. So,
yeah, just the same yo-yo move going off and on and off and on all year. It seems to be that preventive move previous to games to make sure you have a kicker just in case something were to happen to Boswell, whether you were to pull a muscle in pre-game stretches or come down with the COVID or something like that. You know, it's a smart move. The kid will probably be brought to camp next year, I would assume, with all the off and on again.
Yep.
Game day inactive. Some of these names are going to sound familiar. Some of them are going to surprise. Dwayne Haskins for the Shocker of the Year is an inactive once again. Punter Corliss Waitman. So that meant Pittsburgh decided to give the rookie, Presley Harvin III, the nod at punter. Yep. Anthony McFarland, again, that's a healthy scratch as far as we know. He's been a healthy scratch the last three or four games, I want to say. Middle linebacker T. Gray Scales, which just because you're on the 53 doesn't mean you got to play. Dan Moore Jr., which was a big disappointment because of that left ankle. I think it was left ankle. It was one of his ankles he hurt in that game against the Browns. Unable to get healthy enough to play against the Ravens,
yeah,
which was a real bummer. And then defensive lineman Carlos Davis, the other scratch. And I think Carlos Davis was also a healthy scratch.
Yeah, I think you're right. I didn't hear anything injury-related or see anything injury-related. So,
yeah.
Yeah, so those were all the inactives for the game. And I do want to note that I think so we talked about Presley Harvin and his father passing away. He also lost his grandmother. I don't know if you saw that. So he did post to Instagram. I don't remember if that was the day before game day, or I think that might have been the day before. And so maybe that was what was keeping him out. Maybe he was just waiting until, you know, everything else happened. Maybe that was something they knew was coming. But it was very, very nice to see him come in there. Or maybe actually it might have been yesterday morning. It might have been game day morning, if I'm not mistaken. So again, jeez. Yeah, our prayers are up.
This poor guy,
his family. Yeah, this poor kid, man. He's like, what, 22 maybe?
Yeah, he's probably 22 years old.
So just rough to see that happen for sure, and rough that he's going through all that in his rookie season. It's a lot to take in, but you know what? He's taking it well, and he's handling it. Not that we would judge him or anything if he wasn't handling it well, but he's a mature young man at this point for sure, and you can see it in his posts and the things absolutely. He says.
If he didn't play in that game against the Ravens, I would have thought no less of him by any means.
No.
I would have been like, you know what, man?
He could have sat out the rest of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. And no one that's rational would have thought any less of him.
Nope.
Hats off to him for being able to compose himself enough to play. And he played decent. You know, it wasn't amazing, but he wasn't a huge negative either. I felt that he was very kind of even keel with those punts being in that 40 to 45 yard range. You like to see him a little longer. He can punt them longer, but I think he's trying to be a little bit more cautious, because I think sometimes when he has the shorter punts, it's because he's over swinging.
Yeah.
And sometimes when you try to hit something as hard as you can, whether it be punting a ball or swinging at a baseball or something, you're more likely to miss.
Yep.
So I think he's kind of dialing it back a little bit to make sure that he makes good contact and at least has a decent punt. And he's being successful with that. So hopefully we'll be able to, in the future, get that up to the next level where his potential is.
Yep. Abso-freaking-lutely. So now, time to go on to this game.
Yeah, man.
Holy cow. First off, I didn't expect us to win. I also didn't expect us to lose, which is a weird thing to say. I just expected a typical Baltimore-Pittsburgh game, and I think we got it.
Yeah.
To say the least.
Yeah.
How many times in the past 10, 15 years, even just the 18, the length of Ben's career with Pittsburgh, has it been a three-point decision? It's probably well over half.
Probably a lot of them. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think a lot of the games, it's been very, very close in the score.
Yeah, so again, we got the dub. It went to overtime. Luckily, Ben got it done. Boz for president, before we go any further.
That's right. Boz for president, baby.
He is the most underprivileged, I don't even know what to call him, underappreciated.
Underappreciated.
I said underprivileged. Yeah. underappreciated kicker in the NFL. And I don't get me wrong, he's very appreciated by us. Very much so. We talk about absolutely. Him all the time. But as far as NFL kickers go, Boz is underappreciated, and Boz is president.
That's it, man. That's what is he, 36 of 40 on the season? Something like that's that. Just incredible, man.
I think he's perfect for game winners, though. Just saying.
Might be.
Just saying. No, I got to look it up later. but, yeah, again, this game, how many field goals did Boz have? Three? Three field goals, including the game winner. Justin Tucker only had two, sucker.
Yeah. Second best kicker in the game, Justin Tucker.
Second best. Just change your number to two now. Just enjoy it.
Might as well.
But no, I think this game overall speaks volumes to, quite frankly, the division. The AFC North division as a whole has been wild this year to say. I mean, the Bengals won the division. That's all you need to know.
Yeah. And they were only a game up on Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh was only a game up on the Ravens and Browns. That's how close the whole division ended up.
Yep. It was a wild
There was division. A lot of people at the beginning of the season saying that there could easily be three playoff spots coming out of the AFC North here. And they were close.
Very close.
They were close, man. The Ravens were real close to making that a thing. And I mean, did the Ravens and Browns end up with the same schedule at the end of the year? I feel like they might have.
The same with the same Ravens ratings? I think they both I think they both ended 8-9.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, they win one more game and they're in the playoffs. Either one of them, you know. It's crazy to think about.
Yeah, then you're looking at their record and the Chargers record and then who's got tiebreakers and all that stuff, you know? So it's
wild time.
Real crazy and what a, you know, in times like this, I like to kind of put a little appreciation out there on Ben's name. Did he have a perfect game in this game? Absolutely. Some of those passes were a little bit askew, as Cody made sure to point out to me while we were having some very, very friendly, very heated banter in the first half about where we felt blamed on the poor performance in the first half. Absolutely, Ben was at fault with some passes not being as accurate as they could have been, but we're blessed to have a quarterback like him, even if this is the end of it right here. Seven of the Steelers' 9 wins this year came off of fourth quarter drives, game-winning or overtime drives by Ben Roethlisberger. What an incredible thing, man. 9 games that were won on the year, 7 of them on a last-minute drive. Incredible. Incredible.
Incredible for Ben.
That was the thing we will always remember about him through his career. As long as he was on the field, even at this late stage.
Say that again. As long as he was on the field, what?
He had a chance in the game.
Yeah.
Because you felt like he could always put one of those crazy games up. He could always give you 500 yards and 5 touchdowns. Because he did 500 yards 3 times in his career.
Only I think quarterback. Only quarterback to do it.
Yeah.
Where you at, Brady? Like, where you at, Manning?
I got a feeling Mahomes is going to beat that. I don't see Mahomes not breaking that, to be honest. But
doesn't he already have regardless. Two? Does he have 2 already?
I think he does, yeah. He did 2 of them in like 1 season, too. It was stupid.
Whatever.
Ben still has that one stretch, though, where he had back-to-back games. One of them over 500 yards, and then the next week he went 350. And had 6 touchdowns and 0 interceptions each game.
Yep.
So he had 12 touchdowns and no interceptions.
That was the Bumblebee Indianapolis game. That was me, you, and Joe and Juanita. We watched that together. I think that was at Joe's house, or Joe and Juanita's house.
Yeah, probably.
I believe also Kendall and Jeremy were there,
Kendall
too.
Kendall and Jeremy probably,
I'm 90% sure. If I remember that correctly, that was the first time I ever made you guys buffalo chicken bow tie pasta. Just saying. Or it was buffalo chicken.
No wonder
chicken
it went
dip.
So well.
I don't remember what it was.
No wonder the whole day went so well.
I know, right? I know.
Started with the pasta. Speaking of the pasta, Ben Roethlisberger, let me tell you about this.
Tell me about him.
You always got a chance.
You always got a chance. Ben, 30 for 44. That's actually a good stat line even right there. I don't like the 44 passes, but only 14 incompletions with how a lot of the first quarter went when we were talking about, or first half went when we were talking about you know, Ben throwing better balls and receivers catching the ball when it's catchable. 14 incomplete passes isn't bad on 44 attempts.
And there was at least four or five balls that hit receivers' hands, you know, perfect, but they were they would be considered drops by a statistician. Mm-hmm. And when you factor stuff like that in, that even positive manner for Ben.
Yeah.
So I feel like that was the big struggle at the end of the regular season here. Specifically Deontay Johnson, his hands were so reliable up until like week 13 or 14. And then all of a sudden it started coming back to him, man. The drops started coming back and it makes me nervous for the future.
Do you want to know what I think happened?
So good about his hands.
Do you want to know what I think happened?
What do you think happened?
I think he got into a rhythm. He was always staying late, doing the catching drills, catching 100 balls, whatever he was doing. And he's like, okay, I got this again. And I think he stopped. Got overconfident. I don't even think he got overconfident. I think he got comfortable.
Okay.
I genuinely think there are certain people in this world, in life, in things, that when they're comfortable, they make mistakes. Because you're not actively trying to be better.
Yeah.
And that's something that I think happened with him. I don't think he was overconfident. I just think he thought he was good. He got comfortable. He got complacent. And he stopped working on it. And that's what happens. So there are some, don't get me wrong, I don't think Davante Adams needs that practice. I don't think, I think there's some players in the NFL that it just comes to them. Unfortunately, yeah. Deontay's not one of them, but I think that's what happened. And I think that he can correct that again by focusing on it and consistently focusing on it throughout the year, not just when he gets good stop. So.
I'll tell you one thing I would love to see him work on in this offseason. And I'm saying this because I know he listens to this show, right? Deontay, you had a hell of a year. At this point in your career, most defenders know that when you catch the ball, you're going to circle back in a semicircle fashion, either to your right or to your left. And you're going to go backwards about 4 yards and then start circling around. And no one's trying to catch you as soon as you catch the ball because of it. They're waiting to see which direction you're going because they know you're going to do it.
Yep. I watched it happen like two or three times in this game.
Yeah. Yeah. So just start going forward instead because you're losing yourself in your yardage numbers. And sometimes you're losing first downs in the process too. Just got to switch that up. Switch that move up. You can still use it. You just can't use it every
Yeah, don't use it every single time.
Let's stick with the wide receivers here, Cody. I feel like we're already talking about them. That's we might fine. As well stay there. The first half of the game, I felt like Chase Claypool really wasn't much of the offense. Mm-hmm. I didn't really feel like the ball was being thrown his way. And then the second half, all of a sudden, they started getting him involved in a major way. With these jet sweeps, with the reverses, even throwing the ball to him. Chase had a tremendous game rushing the And I know this is not a primary responsibility, but the man learned the mistakes he made previously in this, as far as where he was going and how attacking the line of scrimmage. We talked about how he would try to break down and juke people up, and that's not really his game. His game is more make one move and keep going because he's fast, he's big, and he's strong. So use that momentum, and you're going to get a lot of yards on these plays. And he did a great job with it yesterday. I thought he showed a lot of toughness in those run plays. And then in Najee's run late in too. Yep. Najee got stuffed going up the middle, tried to bounce at the left, sees Chase Claypool. And Chase says, no, you follow me. Follow me, Najee. And he went there and just started taking people on and pushing them back. And it just shows that when a wide receiver with his ability really applies himself in the run game and really goes after, man, they don't know what to do.
Yeah.
All they know is that this guy is a lot bigger and stronger than them, and he's coming out. Hey.
He's doing what?
They just want to get out of his way.
Yeah. No, 100%.
You know what I mean? If he applies himself like that and comes at them with that kind of demeanor while blocking on a regular basis, DBs are going to get sick of getting run over, and they're going to be dodging them.
Yeah.
And it's going to make it even easier for Najee when he bounces out to Claypool's side.
Yeah, I can't agree more. Chase Claypool did a phenomenal job. I mean, for example, he led the team in rushing yards, which is wild. On three carries, he had 33 yards. Najee Harris, we'll get into that later, but Najee did have the one good run behind Chase Claypool. But again, Chase Claypool, 5 receptions for 37 yards, 1 touchdown, though. That, you know, that's what matters there a little bit for sure. Chase got involved, but it got involved late. I don't mind. I asked Pittsburgh to get a touchdown in every quarter of this game. You know what? They didn't, but they won, and I don't care. Chase
Claypool, important thing, right?
Yeah. Chase Claypool getting the one touchdown was very huge. You also had Diontae Johnson. We talked about him a little bit, but 7 receptions for 51 yards on 10 targets. That's not horrible. And then you also had Ray McCloud as the other wide receiver to get involved. Those are the only 3 wide receivers that had catches. And Ray was 4 for 37. So wild, because normally Ben gets it to 4 or 5 receivers, not including the tight ends and running backs. But this game he threw to that's who he had. He only had Cody White, right? That was the only player that wide receiver.
I think Cody White was the only other healthy guy out there, right? Yep. So that put him as the only other receiving option. And let's be honest, Cody White is not the most dynamic athlete in the world. So you went to your 3 best athletes, and I think it worked out well, you know? So it was nice to see Ray come through in the clutch. When the game was on the line, when it's 4th down and you've got to get that catch. Yep. And 2 plays earlier, he had one that, and it was a difficult catch. I'll give him credit. It was not an easy play, but he was sliding and got both hands on to bring it in. So here it is. Ben comes right back to the game on the line. You've got to have a play, and he catches it. And tremendous, you know? So this is really showing a lot as far as the maturation of Ray McCloud. I felt Ray also had a very good game in the return game, had multiple returns, both punt and kick, that I thought he was very close to breaking. He looked very exciting again in the return game, where he really showed that desire and that super drive to go try and get every yard he could. So I did feel like we had a pretty nice effort from Ray, especially in the second half and in the return game of this game.
Yeah. No, I can't agree more. I'm going to move on to tight ends before I go back to running backs. I just think we're on that conversation.
Let's talk about the receivers.
Pat Freiermuth, man. 6 for 53. Ooh. Pat Freiermuth is a tank. Yeah, I know. Look at you get all excited.
let's talk about them Penn State tight ends, baby.
Listen, the tight ends in general. Zach Gentry, 4 for 39. I thought Zach had phenomenal game in the sense that he got open, he caught the ball, and he made moves. I don't care that he didn't run people over completely like we'd like to see, but he still didn't allow the first guy to get him down easy.
He's getting 10 yards a catch. You can't ask for more out of your tight ends. I mean, you can, but there's only a couple guys in the entire NFL that are tight ends that get you more than 10 yards a catch. That's all you want from your number 2 tight end is a guy that catches the ball when you throw it to him and moves the sticks. And Gentry is really coming on this season. I know I've talked about this previously in previous episodes. I'm very excited about the future of the tight end room in Pittsburgh right now with Pat Freiermuth and Zach Gentry. And I wasn't saying that a year ago. I was saying, you know, hopefully R.K. Brown can figure out how to catch the ball and Gentry can't even get off the bench. And, you know, Vance McDonald's injured all season. You know, the tight end room did not look pretty last year.
No.
It looks fantastic right now.
And the guy who's supposed to be the starter, if he could even play to 50% of his potential, we'd have 3 quality starter tight ends.
Dude, imagine if he can come back for the playoffs.
Imagine. Would they play him over?
He could absolutely come off of the injured reserve. He could absolutely come off.
Would you play him over Gentry right now?
No, but I'd play some 3 tight end sets, and now all of a sudden you can actually throw the ball out of that formation.
That's fair. You could throw with
all 3 tight ends are receiving options.
You could throw it with Raider.
Maybe. Yeah, so I would actually be able to throw the ball with him. No, I like Raider. I like Raider. He's tough, man. He's tough. He's good on special teams. He's good catching the ball, and he's a good blocker, too. He's a better blocker than Ebron is. Yeah. But realistically, Ebron is a plus athlete. So if you can get a guy like that on the field, that's going to change some matchups and really help open up the defense in upcoming games. So that's kind of a wild card that people aren't talking about, is that there could be a possibility of guys like him coming back in the playoffs. And Kevin Dotson, too. It's a game changer. If you get Kevin Dotson and Eric Ebron back for this game against the Chiefs, that could make a huge difference in this game.
Wildly huge difference for sure. We'll have to wait and see what happens. I'm excited for it. Keep an eye on that.
Yeah, me too, man.
Keep an eye on that for sure. Running backs, Najee Harris, staying in the receiving aspect for just a minute. Only player to catch all of his targets. 4 for 4. Just saying.
And how about that one-handed one, man? Wow.
Yeah. Najee,
that thing was ridiculous. I don't know how he caught that.
And it was
behind him. It was up over his head.
Elbow, too?
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah.
Najee's an animal.
He is. Ultra-talented human being.
Very much so. Obviously, rushing only 28 yards on 11 carries. Not his best game. But to be quite honest, their defensive front seven pretty much manhandled our rushing offense majority of the game.
This is some stout dudes, man. When you look at Calais Campbell, nobody really can block Calais Campbell. And Brandon Williams is one of the bigger, more stout nose tackles in the entire NFL. And Justin Matabuik is a defensive tackle that we talked a lot about in the pre-draft process as a guy that we would have loved to have seen Pittsburgh target because of his high-end athleticism and strength.
Yep.
So this was just a defensive front that was going to be an issue for the Pittsburgh Steelers interior offensive line in the current condition that they were in that game. When you were talking about a fifth string left guard that hadn't really even played guard before this season and not before a few weeks ago, and your backup center and a right guard playing on one leg. And yeah, it had the potential to be bad. And that's what it was. It wasn't good. We at least did see a couple of productive runs in the play early in the game. Benny Snell had a couple productive runs, 7 yards, 9 yards late in the game with the game on the line. 15 yarder. There were some good positive runs, but there was a lot of 0 and 1 yard runs too. And that was the frustrating part to watch because it's difficult to sustain drives when you keep getting to 3rd and 7 and 3rd and 8 because you have to be completing the ball past that to have a good chance of converting, and it's more difficult. You run out of plays that the receivers run that far down the field.
Yep, for sure. Offensive lineman, I don't really have much to say for offensive lineman other than the fact that I still think that Kendrick Green and Ben made a comment that Kendrick Green could play guard next year. I think that J.C. Hassenhauer is a better setter, personally.
I agree.
It
does suck, and I also feel like it's not very close right now either.
No, it's not.
And I don't think that moving Kendrick Green to guard is going to make him magically a good guard either, which is troublesome. There's no way Pittsburgh cuts him. He's going to come back next year. Yep. He's going to probably play out all 4 years of the deal. He's going to get the opportunity to try to correct some of these mistakes that he's making, but it's never going to fix the fact that he doesn't have long arms. It's not going to change the fact that he's only 6'2", and it's not going to change the fact that the Steelers have him listed a lot bigger than what he actually is.
Yep.
I do have to say, I was very pleasantly surprised by Joe Haig in this game. Joe started at left tackle, played the whole game at left tackle, and really looked the part, in my opinion. I didn't see Joe Haig getting his butt kicked at all in this game. One time he got called for a face mask penalty, which I've never even heard of an offensive lineman being before. But his hand was in the general area. Possibly see it on a instant replay, so that ref must have had the perfect angle to call that one. Just in general, I thought Joe really looked very serviceable out there at left tackle. And you know, he's gonna be back next year. He's gonna be your swing guy. Now we know he can play basically 4 of the 5 positions. He just hasn't played center. That's it.
I don't want him to.
No, we probably don't.
I don't want him to.
Probably don't.
That's what he can play any other four if he wants to. I want him to stay right where he's at and perform in any of those other four spots. But
yeah, but very serviceable in the job that he did, I thought.
Very much so. And I think that the rest of the guys, nobody looked horrible in my opinion. I do think that, I can't think of his name right now. Oh my gosh.
Okorafor?
Okorafor could have played better. I think he was the weakest link on the line for that game, personally. But he also, he had a tough challenge that game.
Yeah. Yeah. He probably had the toughest challenge other than the interior guys trying to go up against Campbell and Williams.
Yeah.
I would say too, just you ran out of healthy bodies. It's late in the year, and there weren't enough healthy guys to go. There were multiple times after a play was over, I saw Trey Turner limping around out there. Yeah. But they knew that the alternate was bringing in Rashad Coward, which is not good. The guy can't pass block to save his life, and that would have put Ben getting hit and hit hard. And by a team that has absolutely no problem doing so before, during, or after the whistle. So you got to make sure that you protect your guy. And unfortunately, in that situation, an injured Trey Turner was a better option than any of the backups that were left. So that's kind of what you had no choice but to do.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Defensive line. Let's talk about you want to talk about Cam Hayward first?
Cam Hayward led the team in tackles, if I remember correctly, with only six.
Did he really? That's impressive.
I'm pretty sure, but it was only six. I don't think anyone else had more than that. And if they did, it was combined with assists and solos. Though his were all six solo tackles. Obviously had the one sack, and then two tackles for loss as well. So I know it should have been two sacks.
A crap call.
There were a couple of crap calls.
It was a beautiful, beautiful sack, but actually it should have been a half. It should have been a half for him, half for TJ, because he hit him high while TJ was hitting him low.
Yep.
But I don't know, man. Shoulder pads to helmet apparently is helmet to helmet, or it's illegal to the quarterback or whatever, you know. So
it's hard.
Like the call, but you love the effort from Cam Hayward. He was all over the place, just causing all kinds of problems for the Ravens. Just like he always does, just like he has all year long. Yep. Which is why he's going to the Pro Bowl once again.
Yes, sir. You want to know who I like to have back this game? Chris Wormley.
Yeah.
It was nice to see him back. He got a sack. He got involved. He had another tackle for loss as well. I think he had six total tackles, four solos and two assists. Chris Wormley is a valid, in the grand scheme moving forward, if we don't get other players back or whatever, if Chris Wormley's the guy, Chris Wormley is a competent starter in my opinion. And that is my, I'm like set on that.
Yeah, the way I look at it with Chris Wormley is if you were able to get Tuitt and Alualu back next year,
yep,
you have to feel really good about Wormley being your top backup defensive end type, knowing that he got seven sacks. Who's got a backup defensive end in a 3-4 scheme that gets seven sacks?
Probably not many people. Probably nobody.
That's some Brett Kiesel stuff right there, man. He's the only one that used to do stuff like that. And then now you got Loudermilk also developing right next to him.
Yep.
The potential for what this defensive line could be next year, just getting the two starters back from injury. Just getting those two guys back, another year of maturing for Loudermilk. The development that we saw from Wormley this year, the fact that Hayward still clearly has plenty of gas left in the tank, you have to feel good about the possibility of this group in the future. Honestly, I feel like they don't need to address the defensive line position in the draft. You need to just get those guys in their physical therapy, get them to rehab, and get them back healthy next year, and then let's just run it back.
And get the other guys in the weight room. That's it?
Yeah.
That's it?
Yeah. Loudermilk and Mondo need to be best friends and just stay in the weight room all off. And maybe this is the year that Mondo says, okay, I'm going to trim down and try outside linebacker. I don't know. I do feel like the guy could excel at outside linebacker if he dropped like 20 pounds. But that's not for me to decide. I think he'll probably go the other direction and continue beefing up and try to become stronger instead, because they're going to want him to stay at defensive line because he does have some pass rush ability there. But I just think that there's some serious potential with this defensive line group, and you're starting to see even this linebacker start to come together a little bit. I felt good about the performance Robert Spillane put in, getting a lot of hits at the line of scrimmage, looking good against the run. His pass coverage is not going to be his specialty. But even Devin Bush, I thought, made some better plays and better moves in this game versus what some of the previous games.
Yeah, and Joe Schobert, I'm out. I think we get more. I don't even care if his specialty is pass blocking pass defending. I don't care. Robert Spillane,
he's not as good at it as Devin Bush is.
No, and Robert Spillane is way more of a heavy hitter, and I think has a better football IQ, better awareness of where the play's going, what angles he needs to take to get there, and I think he has a higher motor on the back end. I think he
absolutely
his drive is higher than Joe Schobert. Joe Schobert was a fun trial. You know what? Trials come to an end, and I think this one's over. I'm over it. I don't want him to start again. And I'm sure he's going to start next game.
The linebacker room needed a veteran to calm down, get him back to the basics, and get him playing better football, because they weren't playing good football. And I think Joe's presence actually did help some of the other middle linebackers start playing better and get their confidence back. I think Robert Spillane's confidence was shattered in the preseason. I think he didn't have any. You think he had a couple bad games? And the next thing you know, playing like, but now he looks like a different player, and Devin Bush is starting to play better as the season. You're starting to play out of UG3, Marcus Allen, all together a little bit better, and I just don't see Pittsburgh bringing Joe Schobert back for 9 minutes. I don't think they can valve it.
Yeah, I think I get what you're saying, and I think I understood what you were getting at. But, like, again, Joe Schobert is not the answer to me. Joe Schobert is not the future at a starting middle linebacker. He's not anything. I think that, personally, you either have to go in another direction or you have to put Robert Spillane next to Devin Bush. I don't think there's any other option after this year. I think the Joe Schobert, again, I talked about it earlier. I think the Joe Schobert trial and error, or whatever the heck that was, test, needs to not move forward after this, because I think he's a liability. And I actually think he's a bigger liability than the other person who I still think is a liability, in Terrell Edmunds, even though Terrell Edmunds got a pick in this game. Terrell Edmunds was gifted a pick in this game, just to be clear, because if that play continues on and he doesn't get touched, that's not an interception, period. But we'll get to that. Other linebackers, outside linebackers. TJ Watt.
Yeah.
Now tied for the record with 22 and a half sacks on the year. He also has a potential to have 23 and a half sacks on the year, because currently the early on in the first quarter with like 9 minutes and 47 seconds left, I want to guess, he got a sack fumble that was not called a sack fumble. It was a muffed snap that supposedly makes it a broken play, which you can't get a sack on a broken play, which I think is dumb. But I think it's just too close to be called anything else other than a sack fumble. And we're going to see what happens here. Pittsburgh did request for it to be under review. We'll have to wait and see what happens there. But obviously TJ Watt at the outside linebacker position played very, very well. You also had, Alex Highsmith come in, and although no sacks and no, I don't even think he had a QB hit, if I'm being honest. But Alex Highsmith, again, wasn't a weak point in the defense, if you ask me. I didn't see him getting burnt. I didn't see him having bad angles. There were a couple times where he couldn't hold the edge maybe as good as he should have, but I don't think he was like, it wasn't a bad game for Alex Highsmith is what I'm saying, I guess.
No. I felt like when the defense was getting gashed for those big runs, it was not off tackle, between the tackles. They were finding gaps inside of our outside where the middle linebacker or fill the holes appropriately, or the safeties didn't get in there. But it wasn't bouncing it outside and then cutting it. When all those big runs started happening late, that was all between the tackles. And I just want to say, as far as the play that was not considered a sack after originally being a sack, that we had as far as TJ Watt early in that game.
Yeah.
To me, in order for this to be an aborted play is what they called, because of the fact that it was not a clean snap, it wasn't handled correctly. They say that it would then be considered an aborted play, not a pass play anymore. For it to be an aborted play, he would have to actually give up on the fact that it was a pass and start to try to run. And to me, when you watch the play, the second he picks the ball up and starts to actually take a step with it, he's immediately being hit and the ball comes out. So he didn't have a chance to make the decision to not throw the ball anymore, and it was very off pass play to begin with. So to me, this is a sack, and it is very clearly a sack, because there's no way he could have made enough point to be able to determine that he was no longer considering throwing the ball.
Yeah.
So that's just, yeah, that's the way I see it personally. But obviously I'm no NFL guy, so we'll see. Yeah, we'll see what the NFL decides to say.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. We'll see what they say after review. I personally believe that I compare it to any other situation where QB scrambles out of the pocket. I view it very, very similar to that. At what point does a scrambling quarterback rolling outside of the pocket become a runner? You can still sack
once
somebody
outside. Once
he
passes outside. The line of scrimmage.
Thank you. That's my point.
Yeah.
I think if it's a design pass play, it's a pass play until he passes the line of scrimmage. I don't care if he's running full speed towards the line of scrimmage with the ball tucked. I don't care. If it's a design play and you tackle the quarterback behind the line of scrimmage, it is a sack, period. And this one wasn't even that close. I'm being very dramatic in my example of it. But I believe that's a sack, and I don't think it's very close, to put it politely. Not to hold up or not to go too far in the linebackers. We talked about what we needed to talk about. TJ Watt, he's it. He's the guy. He's
the truth, man.
He's the truth. The truth. Future.
The truth is he's the single season sack leader in NFL history.
Yep. And he's also potentially the defensive player of the year. We'll get to that maybe later this week, maybe later next week. We'll let you know. We're going to talk about that. We're going to take a deep dive, as James likes to call it.
Deep dive. We're going to go into the numbers, not on today's show.
Nope.
But we're going to give you some in-depth look at TJ versus Aaron Donald, who last I knew only had 12 and a half, big whoop. Micah Parsons, who's having a tremendous season. And then Mr. Diggs also, what, like 9 picks on the season, I think?
9 picks, allowed the most yardage out of any quarterback. Yeah. Okay,
I don't think there's really anybody else in the conversation except for, unless maybe we're going to talk about the outside linebacker for the Bears had like 18 sacks.
Yeah,
I guess maybe you could put him in the conversation.
We'll get to that. Secondary. Quinn, we want to get to the secondary. Going back to this game. Oh, yeah. I know who you're talking about. Minka Fitzpatrick and Cam Sutton are the two guys that I really want to talk about. Maybe Terrell Edmonds a little bit. Maybe. But, again, Cam Sutton.
Yes, maybe.
Talk about the play with Cam Sutton, because you were hyped about it when we were watching the game.
Listen, so I thought this was absolutely beautiful. The Ravens had a drive going, had all the momentum. Tyler Huntley is sitting back there, and he thinks he's got a wide open tight end in the end zone. But it only looks that way because Cam Sutton was absolutely baiting the living bejesus out of him, which I love. You don't get too much in the NFL. But he was standing just far enough away to get Tyler Huntley to throw the ball to him. And then the second he did, he jetted right in front of it and picked him off in the end zone, saving the day. No points on the board for the Ravens and Pittsburgh Steeler ball. A beautiful, beautiful 1,000 IQ play from Cam.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought Cam played phenomenal. I mean, he also had 5 tackles. He led the secondary in tackles. He got very involved. There was one play where it was a designed quick pass or outside pass. There was like play action, end around, whatever it was. And the quarterback for the Ravens, Huntley, hit the running back out of the backfield going into the flat. And he got absolutely upended by freaking Cam Sutton. Cam Sutton came in and went right for his legs, made sure he couldn't have any forward momentum, took the legs out. Great play. That's a play that Pittsburgh sometimes gives up big yards out of because the cornerbacks don't come up and make a play. They come up and they lily gag or whatever you want to call it. They try to break down.
Not enough effort.
Don't break down. Go get him and understand that you're making him have to dodge you, which gives other people behind you time to come get him. That's all I have to say to that. So, again, Cam Sutton, phenomenal game. The one interception was absolutely huge, made a very large impact. So I'm not sure. We'll have to wait and see what's happening with as far as if he continues to play like this. What does that mean for next year? Is Cam Sutton starting? Joe Hayden potentially gone? Akilah Witherspoon on the other side like it was this game? What happens? If Cam Sutton can play as well as he did this game, I think we got a future with him.
Yeah, I think, honestly, the way I look at it is Cam Sutton has been a fairly reliable number two all year. Never going to play. He's not fast enough to cover those dudes. But as a number two, covering the number two guys, covering some tight ends and running backs and that sort of thing as well, I think he's really good for that. I think he's a guy that can start on base downs on the outside, slide inside, and nickel downs and really do well in situations. He's just got a great amount of football IQ and spatial awareness about him. And when you allow him to be situated like he was in that goal line play, it really accentuates his attributes in a manner that it makes him play his best ball. And I've seen enough from Akilah Witherspoon to want him back. So I'm personally thinking that if Pittsburgh's smart, they let Joe Hayden go on his way. Unfortunately, Joe's had some. But I'm not surprised to see zero interceptions next to his name this year. The athleticism, it's just dropped off just enough that he's going to be a step or two late every play. That's just the way it's going to work at this point in his career. So the only reason to bring Joe Hayden back, in my opinion, is if you're going to transition safety. So if you were going to do that, then you would let Terrell Edmonds go. But I think you can re-sign Terrell Edmonds for a lot cheaper than you can Joe Hayden as a safety.
Yeah.
And with Terrell Edmonds having 3 picks on the season now, he's starting to get a decent number of pass breakups. You're seeing more than you normally get out of your second best safety. Just saying, we've had a lot of number two safeties that get you 1 pick a year at best. And if one of my two starting safeties, the lesser of the two, can get me 3, I'm not saying I pay him $10 million a year. I'm probably give him $5 million a year and call him a good enough starter until you can address that position appropriately high enough in the draft. Give him like a 2 or 3 year deal, and then you're back in a situation where you've addressed the quarterback, you've addressed middle linebacker, and some of these other more positions, and then you can come back and get another safety.
Yeah, that's I'm assuming Minkins the first level. One you said was offensive line, just to be clear.
Yeah, the offensive line or quarterback, take your pick. Okay. Yeah.
I agree with that to a degree. I think Terrell Edmonds is better than a lot of players you could have in there right now. However, I do think that it wouldn't take, I don't think it personally that it would take a lot to upgrade from that. But again, there are other positions of higher need, higher importance that need to be addressed and need to be upgraded. I get that absolutely 100% completely. So again, I do understand.
I'm with you on that. I do feel like I would personally prefer an upgrade over Terrell Edmonds. But I think in order to do so, you probably have to address it in the first or second round. I think if you take a safety in the third round, you're not necessarily going to get somebody better than what the level is that he is, which is basically just a guy that's good enough as a starter, but not necessarily ever going to be a Pro Bowl. And that's where it's difficult to me, because right now with the holes in the Steelers team, you probably need to reserve the first 2 rounds for other positions for at least the next 2 seasons. So that's the only reason I think they should try to probably retain him for 2 to 3 years on a deal that's no more than $5 or $6 million a year, just so that they can appropriately address it at the correct time. Because after that, then you should have your offensive line rebuilt. Hopefully you've got your quarterback of the future, and then you can go ahead and take a safety in the first round and go get another playmaker like Minka.
I guess that's fair. I guess I also personally think that this could even be a position that you address in potentially free agency. There's some free agents that are going to be available. Quandre Diggs is going to be available from Seattle. Kareem Jackson from Denver. Even a guy on the lower end. You have Sorensen from Kansas City. I think there's guys that wouldn't break the bank, but be an upgrade from Terrell Edmonds.
Yeah, I wouldn't want Sorensen. He's worse than Edmonds.
It's close. It's close. It's close. Okay, no, he's probably worse, but that's fine. Like I said, back end, Sorensen, whatever. But again, so the secondary played very well. I want to address Minkah real fast just for a brief moment.
Let's do it.
I don't have anything else to say about the secondary other than this. Minkah Fitzpatrick late in the game doesn't get enough credit, and James can go on a tangent with this in a minute about the year, but Minkah Fitzpatrick had a phenomenal pass breakup, whatever you want to call it. Punching the ball out perfectly. The ball was thrown phenomenally on the sideline. Let's start with that. Baltimore made a great play call, great throw, almost a great catch, feet in bounds, just catching it, and Minkah punched it perfectly out of the player's hands, out of bounds. You couldn't call it a catch. He punched it out. It wasn't completed. Phenomenal play by Minkah. Absolutely phenomenal. Could have potentially saved the game for all we know. We don't know what would have happened after that. So I was just very impressed and very proud of Minkah in that moment to know the situation, understand, the precision was so good to punch that ball out.
Yeah, and I feel like there's been a lot of plays like that this year with Minkah that don't go in the correct stat line for people to truly appreciate what he's done this year. I feel like he's had a lot better season than people are talking about because they just look at it and say, oh, two interceptions, whatever. You got more Terrell Edmonds than him. He's clearly having a bad year. Like, no, he does so much more than that. And that was a point in case, you know, just with it being late in the game, the down and distance, it's easily a first down if the guy catches the ball. You don't have to intercept it. You don't have to make a knockout hit. What you do have to do is break up that pass, and he did it perfectly.
Yep.
And there's been so many instances like that this season where a week or two later you're going to forget about it because it's not the pick six and it's not the crazy forced fumble. But that pass breakup is just as important, if not more, sometimes.
Yeah, I agree with you for sure. I think it's something that probably, I mean, I agree with you. If it's not an interception, it goes unnoticed. I can even say that I don't always pay attention to plays like that. If they don't end in interceptions or turnovers or forced fumbles or whatever it is. But what it comes down to me is Minkah's making plays and preventing plays from happening. So huge shout out to him. Special teams wise, Boz for president. We've said it time and time again. Boz for
president, baby.
3 for 3 for field goals. 40 was his long, 1 for 1 extra points. Boz literally won the game for us. I don't care what you say. Yes, Ben led the game-winning drive, but Boz won the game. It's good. Put your hands up like this. It's good. Presley Harvin, 8 punts, 37.3 average. Not ideal, but again, his long being 49, that's a good distance. That's kind of what you like to see, depending on where he's at, because 49 could be pinning someone inside the 20, depending on where they were. So that doesn't always give it justice. But he had 3 inside the 20, so that's phenomenal. Great work on his part. And then you obviously have the kickoff and punt return. You talked about Ray Ray a little bit. 3 returns for 22-yard average on kickoffs, and then punt return 2 for 14.5. So I don't know. It was what it was. Long snapper did well because it matters.
Boy, Christian Kuntz.
So yeah, that's
46 never looked so good.
Stop. Maybe listen, someone with the name Bettis.
That was 36.
I know. I'm just messing with you. But again, we can't thank you guys enough. That's going to wrap up today's episode. Just kidding. Only a little bit of injury stuff, to talk about.
Yep. So, post game, first off, Najee Harris elbow in the game. He was able to come back into the game.
Right elbow, right?
I don't recall which one.
It was his right you. Because he was working on holding with his left. I remember.
Yeah. Yeah. So he was able to come back. They did say that he will be able to play in the playoff game. So expect that to be the truth. Monday, today, that is, wide receiver Tyler Vaughns, who was just cut before the game, was re-signed back to the practice squad in a corresponding move. They released kicker Sam Sloman. Tell me if you've heard this story before.
We're sure you
have. So poor Sam Sloman released. Wouldn't be surprised if he is re-signed again on Saturday, right before coming game against the Chiefs. So look for that. Pittsburgh wins the sack title. Most sacks by any team in the NFL again this year. That is the fifth year in a row. 55 sacks in total this year. The next closest team, Minnesota Vikings, with 51.
And it could potentially be 56 if they overturn this thing and give TJ Watt the sack title. So yeah. Look forward to that potentially coming later this week, maybe Wednesday, maybe Thursday. They'll probably have a decision made by then if they're even reviewing it.
More importantly, later on this week, we will be bringing you yet another episode looking ahead at the Steelers-Chiefs game and what Pittsburgh can do to have a better result than what they did last week. Hopefully, we're going to see some guys come back from injury as well, so keep a close eye on that. We're really hoping to see Kevin Dotson come back, and you never know, maybe some of too. You never know, and maybe Stephon too. It'll surprise everybody, or Eric Ebron, or maybe even Juju. Maybe Juju's ready.
Nope, not Juju.
Probably not, but I'm always going to hope for it.
That's fair enough. So, and I'm going to make a post here probably later tonight or tomorrow on our Instagram that will be posted to also our Facebook, just kind of sharing with you guys, just talking about the Chiefs game. We want you guys to send in or comment your three keys to success, and just maybe we'll talk about yours on the podcast on Friday or Saturday. No, it'll be Friday, whenever we decide to record. So, again, make sure to tell us your three keys to success against the Kansas City Chiefs, and we look forward to sharing those with you guys on the next podcast. Again, thank you guys so much for listening. Be sure to like and follow on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. Subscribe and hit the bell. Until next time, this is your hosts, James and Cody, signing off.
Peace.